When you've had a C-section, there are just some things to take into consideration because there has been a laceration or a cut of your entire abdominal wall and your uterus. So this could show up if you've been trying to conceive after a C-section and it's not working. Secondary infertility is very frustrating and confusing. Scars hold memory. If you do start touching your scar, you can have a lot of like emotional things come up. You're trying to conceive and it's not working. Always think, could my C-section be playing a role? Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today, I break down everything that you need to know about conceiving after having a C-section. So if you have had a cesarean, either the pregnancy prior or before or at any time, and you are trying to get pregnant again, this episode is for you. I break down what you should do to optimize and heal your scar, how to heal in general, not only physically, but mental, emotionally before you get pregnant again. The other things to consider about how long to wait between getting pregnant and all the different things to take into consideration when you are planning that timeline and doing the healing required to get pregnant again. So buckle up. It's a really good one.
Okay. Welcome back. Here we are at the School of Healthy as a Mother. And today, Dr. Leah is going to outline for us some of the considerations of trying to conceive again after you've had a cesarean, because this is something that maybe a lot of people aren't aware that could change things. Some doctors will give a little bit of informed consent about this. Sometimes they will not. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is overall probably going to be fine, but it's good to know some of these things ahead of time. So if this is you and you're preparing again, buckle up. You'll enjoy.
Yeah. Yay. Perfect. Okay. So basically when you've had a C-section, there are just some things to take into consideration because there has been a laceration or a cut of your entire abdominal wall and your uterus. And depending on your C-section, sometimes it's traumatic or not traumatic, but urgent, like emergency. And it can be really quick. You know, the cut can be quick. The baby can be pulled out really quickly and, you know, sewed up really quickly. Like, it just depends. Even in a calmer C-section, it's not like you're going into plastics and they have this, like, amazing, you know, lining up of all of the layers. And, you know, it's just, there can be lots of different experiences of scars and scar tissue from a C-section. So that's the first thing to keep in mind is the impact of the actual scar on your uterus and how that could affect implantation for your next baby. So when you are going to get pregnant, you know, sperm meets egg and then the little embryo is floating around in your body trying to find a place to attach. And where that baby chooses to attach can vary based on each person. Sometimes the baby attaches up high or down low or, you know, depending on where it is. And so if you have an issue with how your C-section's healed, it can create for some people called an isthmoseal, which is a really weird, or a niche. It's basically a pouching or a pocket where things can get trapped, like fluid can get trapped, and there can just be issues in your uterus that are less than ideal for getting pregnant again. So this could show up if you've been trying to conceive after a C-section and it's not working. Like maybe you got pregnant really easily the first time, but then now you're trying and it's not happening. And so this might be a reason to do some imaging and just see if everything is good in that regard. You can also have spotting before periods. That can also be from low progesterone, but it can also be from a C-section. So if you are a person who's had that, it might be worth thinking about. The other thing is adhesions. Adhesions is when tissue can become attached when it shouldn't. And sometimes because of how scars heal, the body's trying to do the best job of trying to build up tissue in an area that was cut, right? It's like, oh my God, you just cut this whole huge, like multiple layers of my abdominal wall. And I'm trying to protect you from not letting all of your organs fall out and to, like, you know, put things all back together. But sometimes in that process, there can be too much tissue that is created and it can make other parts of your organs or your body stick together. So that's what adhesions are. And it can be attached to your uterus, to your bladder, to the abdominal wall, to your ovaries. And if you have endometriosis, this might even be worse because you already have a lot of other growths that are kind of happening. And so throw a C-section into the mix. And now your body's trying to heal. There's like lesions all over the place. So it's just something to be aware of. It does not mean that you cannot get pregnant after C-section. Absolutely, you can. Women do all the time. This is mostly if you haven't done any scar work, if you notice a lot of really chunky, clunky, tight, if like the C-section scar feels really tight and are really thick and nodule-y, it just might be nice to do some of the work before you get pregnant to kind of break that down. And if you're a person who is newly fresh out of a C-section, to not wait to work on your scar and to work on that as soon as possible so that you limit this kind of stuff for the future.
Okay, I want to add too about, or are you, do you already have it that you're going to talk about previa, placenta previa and accreta risk?
No, you can talk about that right now.
Okay, so one thing to know about is that when we have had a cesarean, mm-hmm. your risk for two different placental anomalies, placenta previa and placenta accreta, do increase. But let's talk mm-hmm. about the rates of the risk. I pulled up the stats right here because it's not that crazy. So a previa is where the placenta is so low lying that it's covering the opening of the cervix. Mm-hmm. So it usually necessitates another cesarean. Sometimes it moves out of the way, but usually it's like, okay. And maybe that was the reason why you had the first cesarean in the first place. But mm-hmm. so your baseline risk with no prior cesarean of just like a first time pregnancy, let's just say, or subsequent, but without a cesarean in the history, is 0.3 to 0.5% of pregnancies are going to have a previa, which is good because this mm-hmm. is a, you know, life altering anomaly. So it's not like chosen for in biological life, you know, because right. it would not be a good thing. So it's roughly one in every 200 to 300 pregnancies. But after we've had a cesarean, the risk is, it doubles. Okay. So, but what does that mean? It means that it actually goes from like the point, what was it? 3 to 0.5, it goes now to 0.6 to 1% risk. So yes, okay. it does double, but we have to look at the actual overall risk. It's still very, very uncommon. Okay, now with accreta is where the placenta burrows in too deeply into the uterine muscle, and mm-hmm. it is going to need to be surgically removed. It has a much harder time coming out on its own without severe bleeding. This on its own without prior cesarean risk is a one in every 2,500 pregnancies, so 0.04% risk. It's very uncommon, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. And as our cesareans go on, if you've had one cesarean, now your risk is 0.2 to 0.3%. If you've had like four cesareans, your risk of an accreta is 3 to 7%. So, oh, wow. you know, it goes up kind of a lot each time. It increases 5 to 7 times each cesarean.
Okay. Okay, but, wow, that's good
to know. Okay. So one other thing to know about is that if you've had a prior cesarean and now in your like second pregnancy, whatever it is, subsequent pregnancy, you have a previa, the risk of that previa also being an accreta Ooh. Is like way higher. So say you have previa now and you had one cesarean in your history, your chance of that previa also being an accreta at the scar level is 11 to 24%.
Wow.
If you've had two prior cesareans and now currently in your third pregnancy, you have a previa, the chance of that being also an accreta is 40%. So big risks there. Again, there's not like a ton you can do. You just have to know. And yeah. I do think, though, like you said, scar work and scar mobility and treatment and things, even though it's on the outside, it's still affecting the way that everything is going with fascia and scar tissue and adhesions on the inside, and is definitely, there's no downside to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Okay. So that's like the physical structure of the uterus, the actual scar, the scar healing, the scar tissue, the adhesions, and then the accreta and previa risks. The other thing to take in consideration is the microbiome disruption. When you have a C-section, you are given a lot of antibiotics, which makes sense because they are literally cutting you open, pulling a baby out of your abdomen, sewing you back up. And so you're on usually IV antibiotics, maybe even oral. And this might be something that could impact your gut microbiome, but also your vaginal microbiome that can then potentially impact your microbiome for getting pregnant again. So this is very confusing to women. Secondary infertility is very frustrating and confusing because sometimes you get pregnant very easily the first time or the first and second time, and then you know, maybe a subsequent pregnancy, it's just not happening. So just think back, if you had a C-section, these are some things to think about. You might want to do some vaginal microbiome testing with companies like Evie, we really like, and just see, is there an imbalance of the bacteria in your vagina, and do we need to address that so that you have a better womb environment to get pregnant? This also benefits your baby. It's not about just getting pregnant, but having a good lactobacillus-rich microbiome without a lot of bad bacteria that is less than ideal when you give birth, because baby gets your microbiome. It's just nice to optimize before getting pregnant. The other thing to think about is nervous system and trauma. Again, everybody's experience of their C-section is different, but outside of someone who's just like, I have a reason to go in, I opt in for like a gentle cesarean, maybe you have twins or something like that. More likely than not, when people have a C-section, it's not something that they wanted, or there's some urgency or some trauma or some emergency that can create a lot of trauma. And the body remembers that, right? The body remembers what is happening there. There's also the physical trauma of having an abdominal surgery, of having your baby pulled out of your belly, you know, until you watch it. My husband was not allowed to record my daughter's birth in the OR, but he did. And so I have the video of her being pulled out of me, and it's like, whoa, that is insane. You know, that like this huge baby is pulled out of your abdomen like that. Not that it's not crazy that it comes out of your vagina either. I think it's all crazy. But
it is crazy.
A lot.
It's always crazy.
It's always crazy. And so, you know, scars, if you look at a mental, emotional, energetic perspective, scars hold memory, mm-hmm. a huge, huge amount. This is why for some women, I mean, I've worked with patients who they can't even touch their C-section. I mean, it is painful, and it is, there is a lot of weird feeling. There can be numbness, there can be hypersensitivity, there can be all sorts of things that happen with C-section scars, but there's also the trauma that it can reactivate. And so it's important for you to find containers of support with that, whether that's a therapist, a somatic worker, mm-hmm. a womb specialist, somebody who can hold space for you with working physically on your C-section scar, but also for your mental, emotional health for when things come up. And know that if you do start touching your scar, working on your scar, you can have a lot of like emotional things come up. And it might not make sense because triggers of trauma can be in random times and in random places, and they can feel out of proportion for what is going on in your life right now. But scars hold memory. So
they're literally like little webs of
yes.
memory in so many different ways. And sometimes, you know, people will like get their neck cracked or something and like have a flashback or have some kind of, one time I remember being in a yoga retreat, we were doing like arm balances, and I fell, and I kind of just like fell on the side of my head. So it didn't hurt me, but I like felt my neck crack. Like it just happened to, you know, like as if I had gone to the chiropractor or something, but I just immediately started bawling, mm-hmm. not because I was hurt, not because I, anything. It just, it released something. And I was like, whoa, what was that? Or, you know, like they say in yoga too, with like hip, what are they called? Like, I don't know,
hip openings.
Opening. Yeah. There you go. Good Lord. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've been to yoga. I used to be a teacher. Okay.
We are one openings. Brain together. We have it all together. Just the both of us.
Just between the two of us, we are one brain. So yeah, anyway, that is a legitimate concept. So it's important to know about. And also I think, you know, there is, if you're one of those people who, when you look at your body and you look at your cesarean scar and maybe you have extra tissue that hangs over or something like that, and if you have a very negative mindset, there's a good place to start is knowing like, mm-hmm. okay, I'm actually holding a lot here. Because even if you don't have that and you don't think that you probably hold much to it, once you start digging around in there, something might come up. But if it's mm-hmm. very like, you're like, I hate this like look of this, or I hate my body, or my body failed, or whatever, you know, there's a lot to work through there.
Yeah. So I highly, highly, highly recommend, I mean, I recommend this for anybody who's going through anything at all, is to just do therapy, to do the processing, to do the internal work. I just think it should be at the very tip top of most people's life and their experiences. So that's huge. And then also some other things that come up with that, you know, to have another baby, you have to have sex. And unless you're doing IVF, which has its own implications too, but you know, there can be issues with now desire, because maybe you don't feel as desirable because you look at yourself naked and you do not look like you used to. I mean, I know this very, very well. You know, you have a huge scar across your body. And for me, that's a lot of shifting perspective of being grateful that this was how my babies came into the world, but it doesn't make it any easier. Like, mm-hmm. I used to love the way I looked naked, and my husband is so sweet. He's like, do you look at me? Because he has scars too from having children, because he had to have two varicoceles. He had to have a testicular surgery for us to have kids, and he has scars. And he's like, when you look at me, do you love me less? And I'm like, no. He's like, do you think that I'm any less? I'm like, no, not at all. Like, I'm so, like, it makes me want to cry. Like, I'm so grateful that you did that to give me children. He's like, I think the same about you.
Oh my God, stop. I'm not going to be able to deal with that.
I know. Poor Morgan's so emotional.
But it is so true. And I'm not somebody that has, you guys, what are they freaking called? The lines on your stomach? What are they called? Oh,
like stretch marks?
Stretch marks, good God. Wow. Someone needs to come and study my brain right now. Okay. I am not somebody that gets stretch marks, mm-hmm. and I don't know why my mom doesn't have them. Well, actually, I have them in other places. I have them on my hips and my legs and on my boobs, but not on my mm-hmm. stomach for some reason. But like, mm-hmm. it is something that your body, I mean, I still have changes though to my body, like my belly button and my ab, you know, everything looks like a little different mm-hmm. or whatever. But it's such a common experience for women to just feel so down about their bodies. And mm-hmm. it is this cultural thing that I think really needs to shift of like, how could you expect to go through that and not be different? How could mm-hmm. you expect to, you know, and why are we so mm-hmm. harsh on those scenarios when it's so, you know who I love is the Birds Papaya. Birds, do you follow mm-hmm. her? Do you know who she is?
Yeah.
And she's always, she has tons of stretch marks. God, I almost forgot the word again. And I love how she's just like, yeah, this is where all my babies came from. Are you kidding me? And she just flunts. She's like gorgeous. She's a literal model. But her belly is not model belly. And
yeah,
it's just one of those things as women that we deal with in a different kind of way, all of us. And it's, I don't know where I was going with that, but it is such something like such a beautiful reframe that he's giving you with that, like, thank you for doing that. Like, you are a warrior. You did that for us.
I know. It's really, really sweet. And it helps so much. But there's, you know, there's still aspects where it's like, oh, like, you know, that's different. So just whatever you need to do to, again, process that. Like, there's more that I need to do probably with that as well. But that might come up for you if now you're having issues with feeling desire or, you know, maybe even, you know, it's just, there's a lot to unpack there. So nervous system is also important, of just understanding what happened around the trauma and that whole picture. Acupuncture is a wonderful thing as well that can help with the scars and also with the trauma and the processing. And so I highly, highly recommend for people to do that. The next thing to talk about in preparation for getting pregnant again is how long do you wait? And I actually just got this question on Instagram the other day. And technically, the conventional technicality is 18 months between births is what people recommend. But I personally think that's still too soon unless you are running out of time. You know, if you really cannot wait any longer, 18 months feels so close to me. You know, that would be 9 months after having your baby, you know, you're pregnant. And I don't know. I mean, like, I couldn't even hardly do anything 9 months after having a C-section. It took me an entire year to recover. And maybe I'm the anomaly and I wasn't as dedicated to like get back in there and get my core, you know, fixed, but I did the best I could. I felt like with what I had, and it wasn't until about 6 months that I felt like, okay, I can now do very, very gentle core exercises where I like can lay on my back and lift my leg into tabletop and put it back down. And that was hard. And it was really, really hard. And I just slowly, slowly, slowly over time. So I can't imagine having 3 months into that now pregnant and now I don't have a core again, you know, mm-hmm. because I was trying to build my core. Now I'm having maybe diastasis and I'm now growing a baby. And I don't know, it to me feels a little soon, but everyone is their own person. And if you have to, they do say that you can, you know, 18 months between births. So 9 months after your last baby's born, get pregnant again. I personally would recommend 2.5 to 3 years is what I would personally recommend, not only for the spacing of letting your C-section heal and letting you feel like you are strong to help your back. Because the other thing people forget about is that when your core is severed and you have no core muscles at all, if you have to lift, if you have to do things like lift your toddler or your baby because you have another child, if you don't have that core strength, your back will take the brunt of it, and it is so bad. I mean, that was one of the reasons why I had to start doing serious core work to get my core back, because I have a baby that I had to lift and do things, and my back was killing me. And a lot of people forget that a weak core means a hurt back. And that's another thing that I would just take into consideration if you're trying to get pregnant again, of if you tend to have bad backs in general, or, you know, it could just start from the beginning of, wow, I have never had back pain before, but it's because your core is not strong enough. And if you take the time to strengthen your core appropriately, doing actual C-section healing activities, not just like, oh, I'm going to go do a bunch of crunches. That is not what I'm talking about. Like, you want deep core activation, very intentional, like pulling the belly button to the spine, doing very stable movements. I actually don't recommend doing crunches for a very, very long time ever, like after having a C-section, until your core is so, so good and strong. Because that will protect your back going into your next pregnancy, where again, you lose your core a little bit once you're pregnant, and then your back hurts really bad too. So
I remember you with baby wearing. And I mean, that's a real reality. And your babies were big too. So you had this like big, heavy, chunky baby that you're wearing all the time because you're also taking care of another toddler. And this is a reality for many people. So the back-to-back-to-backs are sort of a rare situation where people can do that well and they can thrive. Most of the time you're putting some part of your body in a bad place. And we don't want to have chronic pain. It's very difficult to recover those areas whilst actively mothering. So, I mean, the 3 year, two and a half to 3 year recommendation, I echo for many reasons. One of them also being like, if you're breastfeeding, to have a period of time weaned before you get pregnant again, in most cases. You know, I know there are going to be the, like I call them the mother goose types, who just can back to back and they tandem and whatever, and that's great for them and they have no issues. But for the average woman, I think it's really nice to be able to take a break, wean, get, you know, replenish on nutrient stores, maybe do a little bit of detoxification, go on a trip, do something where like having a baby nursing on you is not possible. And before you run it back again.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with Needed to bring you this episode. Stress is something that many people can experience along the fertility journey, and it's something that influences how they handle oxidative damage. That's why supporting overall cellular health can be super valuable at any stage along the fertility journey. One product I personally love recommending is Needed's A Quality Support. I helped contribute to formulating this product, but even if I hadn't, I would still be confident recommending it because it's so great. It's designed to provide antioxidant and mitochondrial support with ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, ALA, and PQQ. I also love pairing it with Needed's comprehensive prenatal and their CoQ10 for a comprehensive approach. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Okay, back to the show. Yeah, I love that. And like you had mentioned, the closer intervals together does increase your risk of uterine rupture, placenta accreta and previa, like you mentioned, and preterm birth. So those are shown to be worse when you have babies closer together after C-section. And then just maternal repletion in general, like, you know, repleting your nutrients, your hormones, just like any spacing with babies. But C-section is a huge surgery and a huge recovery, and it takes even more from you. So just keeping that in mind. And also, once you, like, if you have babies really close together, keep in mind that, okay, let's say you end up having to have a second C-section like I did. Now you have a little baby and a toddler that still needs you to be like to carry them. You know, it's just different than having a 3-year-old versus an 18-month-old or whatever with having this new baby. And so another thing to think about, I don't think a lot of people think that far along, because I know when I had my second C-section, I was so grateful that my daughter was at the age where she could walk herself, you know, and I didn't have to carry her everywhere. So that is huge, because you just can't lift, you know, people mm-hmm. are little babies when they're toddlers, when they're little. You can lift your tiny little baby and that's it, like nothing more. Okay, next section is like sign that your uterus might need more support. Again, spotting before your period can be a sign of some of these issues. That can also be low progesterone though, so just investigating is important. Brown discharge after your period is a sign of tissue, like just old tissue that's like sloughing. painful ovulation, pelvic pulling or tightness. If you feel like, oh my gosh, like something's like pulling, like it feels like in there. Painful sex can be another one. Again, secondary infertility. If you're trying to conceive and it's not working, always think, could my C-section be playing a role? And then fluid seen on ultrasound. So you might want to get additional imaging like a saline sonogram, a hysteroscopy, or a pelvic ultrasound, but definitely with someone who's experienced just so that, you know, they know what they're looking for.
What's the fluid? Is it, what's that?
Yeah. So like if the scar doesn't heal correctly, it can create that little pouch
that I talked
about at the beginning, and then fluid collects there. It's kind of like a, like, I don't know how, the uterus is like a balloon in a way. It's not like a straight linear line that's taut and pulled all the way. And so sometimes it can heal almost with like a pouch. There's like a pouch inside, and then it can collect fluid and cause inflammation and all sorts of stuff. All right. So the next section is what to do to support scar healing before conceiving. And really this starts with after having a C-section, depending on where you're listening to this on the trajectory. The sooner you can do this work, the better, but it's also never too late to do it. And my biggest recommendation is to definitely go to pelvic floor physical therapy to get evaluated after birth, no matter how you have birth, vaginal or C-section, but definitely after a C-section. And I know for me, when I went to my pelvic PT, I mean, I've done exercise my whole life, and I felt like I knew my core very well. And she would be like, okay, activate your core. And I'm like, I literally couldn't. Like, I could not connect to those muscles at all because they were completely shot. I mean, you have to retrain the nerves and the muscle to activate, and a lot of women start to do it wrong. They push out. So if someone's like, brace, like you're going to be punched, you know, and you kind of like push out, that is not core activation, and that is not what you want to be doing. And I was even told by a personal trainer a couple years ago that that's how you activate your core, is you act like someone's going to punch you in the stomach and you like brace like that.
Whoa.
I know. Terrible. I mean, but there's all sorts of misinformation out there. And so if that was like the one piece of advice you got and you didn't get any other piece of advice, like you could have been training your core completely backwards. So it's really important to work with a really knowledgeable pelvic PT who can help to teach you to properly activate your core, because just doing it on your own or even just doing the exercises at home, you might not be doing it correctly. And so you're doing all of this work and effort, but you're not actually doing it right. And so you can end up still hurting yourself. And we don't want that. It's another, you know, contributor to diastasis recti that won't heal. Like, it's important to learn what you're physically doing and have someone check you of like, yes, you are doing that right. Keep doing that.
Yeah. They'll like literally touch you and like, or have fingers inside of you and be like, okay, nope, not there. No, you're not doing it. Nope, do it like this. And that was mind-blowing for me. That was a really big wake-up call. Like, I had no clue that I was always holding tension in my pelvic floor until after I had Gage and I started seeing Lauren, which we'll put her information in the show notes. If you're living in Southern California, Thrive Physical Therapy is really amazing. And then if you're living in the Treasure Valley, we have some other resources for you. And then I also what was that?
Oh, I love so many. Like Restore, Sarah, Restore is my favorite here in the Treasure Valley, and that there's a lot of great ones.
Yeah, we'll put some of that stuff in the show notes. And then also the Bloom Method on Instagram. I've learned a lot from them about like transversus abdominis activation and specifically how to even be able to help core stuff while you are pregnant, because there's a lot of things you can't do. You can't do planks. You can't do, certainly not crunches and sit-ups and stuff, but you can actually continue to keep the integrity of that wraparound abdominal sheath and how it can stabilize you. It's really great. So all of that will be in the show notes.
Yeah, put that in the show notes. Perfect. So some other things are visceral manipulation. This is working with somebody who can help. It's almost like craniosacral, but with your organs. Visceral means organ. So you don't have to do that, but it is something that can be helpful. You can do things on your own, self-scar massage. Sometimes pelvic PTs will teach you how to do that, but there's also YouTube videos and things. It can start really basic. If you're newly post C-section, again, get the go-ahead from your doctor that you can start, you know, touching, that the scar is healed well enough. And then you can do this at any point from approval from doctor on. But, you know, moving the skin, like sliding the skin to start doing that, just even touching it. Honestly, you guys, it's so weird when you have a C-section because you're numb and you're hypersensitive at the same time in different areas. And so just like the very, very slight touch of like skin around there can be almost excruciatingly painful. but then also some areas are numb and you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to feel feeling on my abdomen. It's just, it can be really hard. But the more that you touch that area, even like soft touch, so the nerves, there's lots of different types of nerves. There's soft touch nerves, you know, when you like barely touch your skin, that is working on different nerves than deep pressure touch nerves. And doing as much as you can to build back the nerval paths, be like, hey, over here, like build over here, because nerves build back. But you have to give it the stimuli to do so. So lots of light touch around the scar, then deeper touch, and then starting to slide the skin over the scar, and then pull, eventually, not right away, once you like are desensitized to that, pulling up on the skin, it feels so weird and it's like so, like what? But like the more that you can mobilize that tissue and move it and let it be moving around, the better. I also love gua sha stones. So those like stones that are kind of flat and people use them for their face and for different things and to rub on there. I mean, it is so painful to work on scar tissue, no matter where it is on the body. If you've ever had a scar, if anyone's ever done scar tissue work, it is not fun. And like I mentioned earlier, this can bring up a lot of stuff. It can bring up a lot of emotional stuff. It can bring up the pain itself, just is hard, but then also all of the implications of it. You might be like, I never wanted this, you know, like the whole time. It's not like other scars maybe that you got from doing something that was just different than the meaning that is tied into this for some women. So just be gentle with yourself, but doing the scar work with the gua sha, it can be so painful, but it is really important to start to move through that. And the sooner you do it and the more often you do it, the easier it is than to try to break through a long, you know, many, many months of scar tissue, but it's still possible. And then doing things like castor oil packs, anything to bring blood flow to the area. You just want nerves regenerated, lots of blood flow, lots of movement of skin, of tissue, of everything. We just don't want things to adhere and get stuck. So like I said, castor oil packs, red light therapy is another amazing tool for all of that, and acupuncture are huge. Acupuncture is a wonderful thing to help with scar healing and nerve regeneration and all of that. As far as supporting the tissues, there are some nutrients that you can do, like vitamin C is really good for building collagen and for building tissue, glycine, proline, zinc, copper, collagen. So lots of collagen proteins or bone broth. These are huge, but you don't want to do too much early on. When you do this really, really early on in a C-section, you can almost build too much tissue and you get too much scar tissue. So you don't want it to be excessive. I would say doing the physical work is even more important than building up those kind of collagen things. The other thing you can also take are enzymes away from food. So things like bromelain and natokinase, and these are enzymes that help to break down excessive scar tissue. You wouldn't take them with food because that would break down your food. But if you take them away from food, that can be another thing to make sure that you have enough tissue, but not too much tissue, and to kind of help just keep things in check. And then just working on inflammation. So omega-3s, curcumin, which is found in turmeric, antioxidants, all of that good stuff. We want to restore the microbiome. Again, if you've had a C-section, there were probably antibiotics. So doing all the things there, potentially testing your vaginal microbiome, but lots of fermented foods, specific probiotics, especially lactobacillus-based probiotics. There are a couple species that are very good for the vagina. Things like Crispatus, Ruteri, Rhamnosus, those are kind of like the three biggest ones that we see in supplemental form. There are other amazing lactobacillus species that are needed for the vaginal microbiome, but those are three that you can get very easily in probiotic form. And yeah, so some more pelvic floor recovery. Like I said, if you have a weak core, we really want to work on that. If you have a diastasis recti, which is the separation of your muscles, you really want to address that as much as you can before getting pregnant again. It's like, ugh, it's just, I know it can be
as
really
much
hard
as you possibly can.
I know. And it's like, I understand it's a process, but with all of these things, the sooner you work on it and the more dedicated you are to working on it, you're just going to have a better outcome the second time around. And so especially a C-section with a diastasis recti, like there's a lot to heal there. And so that should be taken into consideration when considering your timeline. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just focusing on all of that. We talked about red light therapy, acupuncture, castor oil packs, the circulation. So what I do is I have a gua sha stone, and in the shower when I'm just standing there and like rinsing my conditioner out or my hair or whatever, I'll take the gua sha stone and just kind of rub it in there. And then I usually do more dedicated times where I will actually put castor oil over my C-section, get the gua sha stone and lay in bed when I'm relaxed and just work on the scar tissue that way. And you, again, it's like, it depends on what you do. I've done a lot of red light. I'll just put the red light on when I'm working or laying on the couch or whatever. I literally put the loom box like over my C-section. It's like touching my skin. It doesn't get too hot in one session, not two sessions, then it's too hot to touch your skin. But that has really helped me a lot. And I just love it. So castor oil packs, red light, and gua sha stone for me are just, that's like my three core things that I do all the time. And it's kind of an ongoing thing. You have a scar there forever. I mean, it's like, it doesn't ever really go away, but the more that you can move it and get it mobilized, the better it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love the loom box for so many different things. And that's an excellent one. Even if you don't have a cesarean, there's so many mom uses of it. And yeah, it could be over your vagina if you'd had a tear in your perineum. It can be over the sutures. It can be on clogged ducts and mastitis. It can be on healing nipples. It can be amazing for everything. So many things.
Yeah, it's so good. So we have a link, I think, to save money on it here in the show notes. So definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing to think about when preparing for getting pregnant after C-section is how you want to give birth the second time. And just starting to understand those resources and those thoughts, because as soon as you become pregnant, you know, finding a provider and deciding on what you're going to do, it usually happens pretty early on. So we have a whole episode on VBAC. Do we have two episodes on VBAC?
Yeah, we have one that's like from the perspective of an OB, midwife, and doula. And then we have one that is some VBAC stories from women who've given birth via VBAC. We can put them in the show notes.
Doesn't know, VBAC is vaginal birth after cesarean, which means I've had a C-section with my first or second baby, and then I'm going on to a subsequent pregnancy, and I want to try to have a vaginal birth. And we'll put the links to those so you can learn more about them. Not every woman qualifies to have a VBAC. It depends on you and your history and your case, the state that you live in. Some states won't let you have a VBAC. Like literally, like if you've had a C-section, you cannot have a vaginal birth.
Or it depends on the hospital. Like some of them are just not going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Some hospitals are just not. Some will let you have a VBAC at home and some will not. It depends on the state, the provider. So looking at your legality first and foremost before you get your heart set, I think is important, because if you go down this big long path of like being so determined that you're going to have a home birth VBAC and then you find out that the state will not allow it, like I would go that route first, find out what the laws are and or the hospital that's near you that you want to birth at, and just see what your options are before you go too deep into one rabbit hole or another. And sometimes people, like hospitals, will allow you to try for a VBAC in a hospital but just nowhere else, and so you can think about that as well. It just sort of depends on the provider and their willingness and like knowledge and understanding. Mm-hmm. But then if you've had multiple C-sections, let's say you've had two or three and now you're getting pregnant again, you know, you have to weigh the risks there too, because with every subsequent C-section, there might be more risk of uterine rupture and all of these different things to think about and consider. So it's not so easy to just say all things apply to every woman. So something to think about. I tried to have a VBAC with my second. It obviously didn't work out, which you can listen to my birth story. That's on, both of my birth stories are on the podcast. But like if I were to have a third baby, which is a whole other conversation for another day, at this point, I would probably just opt for a C-section because of the history of my births and how they've gone and how traumatic they've been with like me not going into labor. I know I have a blood sugar thing, so it's very possible that my blood sugar factor, I don't have gestational diabetes, but I make huge babies. I don't know why.
And well, your husband is enormous. So
he's enormous for sure. And they're big and they gestate a long time. You know, I go late. And yeah, so by the time they're ready, they're like 10 pounds or whatever. And I would hate it. I would hate to have a third C-section. It's another reason why I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can have a third baby, because I've already had two C-sections. It is such a process for me. I can't imagine having a third. But I also, at this point, for me personally, it feels like the scale is tipped where I no longer feel like it would feel safe. There's a part of me that would feel nervous about trying to push a baby and like have those intense contractions now that I've had two C-sections. I don't know. Intuitively for me, I'm just like, that feels like a little too much. It didn't after my first. Mm-hmm. I was like, I've had one C-section. I'm going to totally try for VBAC. I can do this. Now that I've had two, I'm just like, neither sounds great. Like I don't want a C-section either. But these are the things, is like with every subsequent baby, we have to reevaluate our desires and our risks and intuition as well, because it may be just intuitively like that's maybe not the best for me. And so these are all things to think about, and obviously nothing that women necessarily want, or if you didn't want this, it can feel really frustrating. And so just circling back again to the mental emotional piece of, if you feel like you have a lot of unresolved trauma from your previous birth, I highly, highly, highly recommend processing that before you get pregnant again. Yeah. Because I just feel like it carries into the next birth. You might be making decisions more out of fear instead of empowerment. Just because, let's say I choose to maybe have a third C-section, doesn't necessarily mean that it's coming from only a place of fear, like irrational fear that's coming from a place of trauma or things like that. Sometimes we can make a decision that is more educated and from a higher empowered intuitive place because you've processed and you've gotten there. And so It doesn't mean that every person who processes their trauma will surely then end up wanting a VBAC, you know? It doesn't mean that. It's like wherever you feel empowered and you're not just knee-jerk reacting to an unprocessed trauma or fear one way or another. It could also be that you have so much fear that you can't give birth vaginally. And like that's another thing to probably process, because maybe you absolutely can. If you process that fear, you would maybe choose a different choice. So just that is a big process, or a big part of this whole process of deciding to get pregnant again after a cesarean, is really moving through that and not just jumping into the next thing without looking at that. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
Yeah, I think that those are all really good points. And sometimes people, you know, won't think about any of that, or they'll accidentally get pregnant and everything's fine too. But it's just like, If there can be more intentionality around it, if you have time and space for it, then these are some things to consider. So
yeah, absolutely. Not always,
And
I just want to note, like what you said, if you do get pregnant, either short, you haven't done this, maybe you're currently pregnant, you had a C-section before, or you get pregnant before you intended to, or whatever, XYZ, you can absolutely do all of this work during pregnancy too. I mean, I did some of my most intense like sexual trauma processing work while I was pregnant with my daughter. You know, every month while I was pregnant, or every week, I met with a person and we did tapping and we went through all these different things and released it out of the body. And so it's not that you can't ever do this once you become pregnant too. And so wherever you are on that journey, it can be helpful. And absolutely, people don't always have to process this. And not everybody has trauma from their C-section. You know, I didn't have as much as maybe other people. Not everybody feels like it's like a big thing that they have to process. It's just something to be aware of. And it is weird when you get pregnant again after you've had a C-section, because you're like, oh my gosh, is my scar going to like break open? Like, how is this baby growing and my belly's going to get big? Is it all going to hold together? And the crazy thing is the body is really good at healing itself, and scars can almost be stronger in a weird way, because the body's brought all of this tissue there to kind of like reinforce it. So you don't really have to fear about that. The uterine rupture is the biggest fear that people talk about in the VBAC space, which is where the uterus kind of like ruptures. But again, the risk is not as high as people make it seem. So
let me tell you what the risk is. I pulled it up because
really good at statistics today.
I feel like Jamie, like for Joe Rogan. You know what he's like?
Yes, tell me the stats.
Pull it up, Jamie.
I love that.
Okay, so I looked it up because this is important to talk about. So a uterine rupture when you've had, okay, if you have had, okay, well, because you had said that about having had two cesareans prior, if you do a repeat cesarean for a third, your risk of uterine rupture is going to be a lot lower, right? That makes sense, but it's still there. I mean, it's 0.02 to 0.05. Maybe, like, I guess the risk would be if you started contractions before you had your elective cesarean, something like that. But okay, so if you have, you're trying for a VBAC after one cesarean, it's a 0.5 to 0.9% risk of uterine rupture. If you are trying for a VBAC after two cesareans, it's 0.9 to 1.8. So it doubles. It does that doubling thing again, but it's also very, like, still an extremely low number. Wow. And the rate of VBAC after two cesareans is still 60 to 70% vaginal positive. Like, like any one woman out of, or, you know, like 60 to 70 out of 100 are going to go on to have a vaginal birth, even if they've had two cesareans. But there's so many factors that go into it. Like, I really think this is, I know I've said this before. I have two things to say. I know I've said it before that I used to think a long time ago, our bodies would never make a baby that was too big to come out of us. Why would that happen? That doesn't make any sense. And I do believe that that used to be the way that it was, because we gave birth in cultures where we had evolved and adapted as that type of morphology. If we were Chinese, we were marrying other Chinese people. If we were Russian, we were marrying other Russian people. If we were Peruvian, we were, you know what I mean? Not marrying, but, like, you know, having babies with. And now that's very different in the global culture. And you are a very lithe, slim woman. You are little, ballerina girl. And you have married this big Russian with shoulders so wide they don't go through a doorway. So, you know, the, it does, it's like, okay, is there a mismatch that would have never happened evolutionarily? Yes. And so do we have real modern repercussions to that? Yes. Does that mean you don't make babies with the person you fall in love with? No, of course not. But it does explain some of this stuff, because the naturalist, the evolutionary biologist in me wants to say that it's not possible, it can't happen. But I had a really enlightening conversation with a midwife who elucidated that exact point to me about how different now with global, you know, intercultural baby making that we were having, and how it actually can be a thing. And then the second thing I wanted to say, so I think that's a huge part of it for you and the reason why it just, like, was not happening. At the end of the day, maybe they would have come out, who knows? Maybe you would have gestated Cade to, like, 44 weeks. Who knows? I mean, he was not coming out.
I know.
And it was really interesting. And Avi, it's like, gosh, it felt so close, but then yet still so far away.
I think she probably was asynclitic. And then what's so complicated is, like, maybe I didn't internalize a lot of trauma from her C-section, but maybe my body did. And then I'm also going into it with my whole history of painful sex. You know, if anyone, there's another episode on that. Oh my God, we have so many episodes to, like, share with you. But, you know, it's very possible that my body was holding on to the trauma that, like, I've been trying to process and heal for so long that just never actually got processed and healed. And so it could have been asynclitic, you know,
with your body holding a little bit of that.
Yeah, with my body holding. But then also I'm thinking, because I've discovered this new diagnosis of this PVD, provoked vestibulodynia, from hormones, which could be playing another role in another part of my painful sex, and has been completely resolved with taking a little bit of bioidentical hormones topically. I don't know this. I have not done any research. It just popped into my head right now. But I'm like, I wonder if there's some issue where, like, I don't get hormones into my tissue down there very well. And maybe that played a role in my cervix not being able to dilate or something. Because I don't know. It just feels like something wasn't working exactly as it was supposed to. And I'm such a young person for all these other things to not work exactly as they're supposed to, like, that has been fixed now with hormones. And so it could be, like, a congenital thing that I just don't receive hormones at that tissue level there. It could be from the trauma that, like, my body kind of shut it off. Like, who knows? But it's another thought that I had of, well, they're very close together. Like, I just wonder, maybe there's something there. So it's just confusing to me where, yes, I could just be like, you're just going into fear and you should just have another vaginal birth if I were to have a third. But everyone has to make that decision for themselves. And for me, I feel like I have so much evidence where I just don't know if it would be worth it. I would consider trying labor to see, you
Yeah,
know,
but
if I.
I get it though. It's like it's mentally exhausting to do what you did again with Kate. Like to go into saying, I'm gonna do for 2 more weeks where you
Yeah.
were in that space of doing like,
Everything
trying to get
possible.
everything going on at sort of a natural, which some people will be like, oh, well, that's why, because you were like pushing him and he wasn't ready. And it's like, well, okay, at some, the law is the
I
law, and at
know.
some point,
42 weeks.
what are you gonna do? You know, and so I would agree that it's definitely better to try to go on the more natural side of things. And it was interesting too, because you like did have certain impulses of, not impulses, but like time periods of contractions where it was like, oh, it's going to happen. And then it would just kind of not. And
So
I don't know. I
weird.
think there's a lot of things going on and it's just very complex. And sometimes we never know. And this is sort of the beauty of birth in a way. But one thing I also wanted to say is that sometimes people have really vaginal, traumatic vaginal births. And sometimes people have a very bad perineal tear and they're like, I am never doing that again. Sometimes it triggers other things, whatever. Maybe I there's a whole slew of things that can happen, even, just in a vaginal birth, even I say even as if it's like expected to always be for perfect. It's not. It's just that sometimes we don't really give as much like clout to those situations. So sometimes people will have a cesarean after that because they're like, I'm not gonna do that again, and I do get it. Or something happened that was negative, like to the baby, and so then they don't want to take that risk, and so they have an early planned cesarean so that they have an alive baby or a healthy baby, and I totally understand and respect that as well. So there's so many things, you guys. I hope that you understand that we
No.
understand and that we are
I
calling out
know.
all of the situations, because what's really frustrating to me is when people don't call out all of the situations and they have very dogmatic, strict behaviors and thoughts around stuff without regard for so many other situations that take place. And it's like, unfortunately, it just is that way. Most of the time, it's going to work out the way that our bodies were designed, and we should act that way. We should plan that way. We should plan for it and work with it, and then fall back when we need to on these life-saving, amazing procedures.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's ignorance, right? Ignorance where people are like, it's always going to be like this. It can always be like this on both sides, conventional and natural, is
Right.
ignorance, you know? So the last thing I just want to lead with is we talked about a lot about the C-section, but preparing for a next baby, there's also preconception time. Just like every baby, like, deserves to have that prep of as much as you can, you know, making sure that things are good, not only for baby, but also for your conception process. So, do we have an episode on preconception a second or third time, like subsequent baby preconception? I thought we did. I don't know, but we have preconception episodes. So, go back to the preconception episodes and just see, because it's very similar. We have getting pregnant while breastfeeding and/or like whether you should wean or not. And so, these are some other things to just plan for and consider. We have a trying to conceive while breastfeeding, if that is still a part of your journey, and or maybe consider weaning. And so just all the things, you know, checking your nutrient levels, your thyroid, your hormones, your gut health, like we talked about, and just preparing for that second baby if that is something on your heart and your mind. But at the end of the day, your body is amazing. It has amazing healing capacities. Women get pregnant after C-sections and have amazing vaginal births that are beautiful all the time. That is definitely the common norm. I'm just throwing out some of the things that could happen, like challenge with getting pregnant and all of these things that it's something to think about, but that's definitely not the norm. And that your body is incredible, that its healing ability is amazing. And yeah, I just want to give that little nugget, and that I'm excited for you if this is a journey that you're going down.
You can do it. We believe in you.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you're dreaming of motherhood someday or you're already on the path and it hasn't been going as you imagined, I want you to know that you do not have to do this alone. Consider joining me inside of my Womanhood Wellness membership. You get a custom blueprint unique to your woman essence type, which is where you are right now on the journey. You have access to all of my courses and content, which includes how to boost egg and sperm quality, the energetics of fertility, investigating fertility, optimizing IVF if that's a path you have to go down, navigating pregnancy loss. I have my Essential Foundations course where you learn all the things that you really need to know to have a thriving hormonal infertility system. You learn the hormone handbook, where I dive deep into all the different hormonal imbalances and what you can do naturally to rebalance them. I have deep dive courses on vaginal microbiome and detoxing, on mindset. I give you my natural medicine protocols. You have the ability to order labs on your own. You get discounts on supplements and other products. I have organized the community by your season. So if you are breaking up with birth control, you can jump in a chat with women in that exact same season. If you are trying to conceive, or if you are going through pregnancy loss or infertility or IVF or low libido, there is a group of women who are going through the same thing. We also have full community areas like our breakfast club, where every Monday we share what we're having for breakfast to inspire each other, and our daily flow, where we connect as a collective community and do challenges and learn from each other in that way. On top of all of that, I do a monthly live Q&A where you can bring your questions, and they're always recorded so you can listen if you can't make them live. And then I have various calls with other practitioners like Sadie, our amazing personal development coach, and so many others, where you will be able to receive healing and learn other perspectives. Being a member inside Womanhood Wellness also gives you discounts to join my upcoming immersions. Take around 22 women for a month to dive deep into a specific topic, like decoding desire or building your dream life or navigating painful periods or navigating unexplained infertility. This is the place that you want to be if you want to know all of the natural root cause and supportive measures that you can take to optimize your womanhood journey and your path to and through motherhood. Head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20% off your first month. I can't wait to see you inside. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.